You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me. Tippi Hedren was a former model when she was seen in a television commercial by Alfred Hitchcock. Hitchcock wanted her for his next film, The Birds, and cast the unknown actress in the lead role. He cast Tippi Hedren again as the star of his next picture, Marnie. Hitchcock also made it clear to Tippi Hedren that he wanted her not only as his star, but also as his lover. Hedren said no to repeated advances, and Hitchcock promised that he would ruin her career if she did not submit. She refused, and Hitchcock, who still had Tippi Hedren under an exclusive contract, did stop Hedren from appearing in any other films, despite high interest in her from other filmmakers. Hedren did eventually return to the screen. In fact, she's the only actress ever to be directed by both Hitchcock and Charlie Chaplin. Tippi Hedren has devoted much of her life to the welfare of wild animals and is the mother of actress Melanie Griffith and the grandmother of actress Dakota Johnson. The story of Tippi Hedren's struggles with Hitchcock has been told in Donald Spoto's book, Spellbound by Beauty, Alfred Hitchcock and His Leading Ladies, and in the film based on that book, The Girl, starring Sienna Miller as Tippi Hedren. But now, at last, Miss Hedren tells her own story in a compelling new book, a bestseller, called Tippi, a Memoir. Tippi Hedren, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Tippi Hedren, did the movie The Girl get it right?
Yes, they did. What I'm most grateful for is that the producers called me from London and said, Tippi, we want to do, you know, your story, and we just want to tell you that we're going to be doing it. And I said, well, I think that's fine, but I want to be involved with what's written and the last, you know, views of it, and so that if there's anything that is not corrected, I may correct it. And they did that. So everything that's in that piece is perfect. It's exactly the way it should be.
Well, it's a harrowing story. How did it feel to see it, you know, depicted on the screen?
Well, it felt good because they did it the right way. They did the truth.
Was there any negative of having to relive it or see it depicted in this way?
I've been rather thrilled with my life, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's been an amazing journey, and I lived every bit of it with great gusto.
Well, I really loved your book, and I felt like you were talking in my ear, so it's really a treat for me to get to talk back to you right now. But, you know, I'm reading the book, and I'm thinking, is there anything that bad that hasn't happened to you? There's fire, floods, horrible injuries, bad marriages. But you seem to be a pretty happy and positive person.
Well, I think I am.
How do you do it?
I don't know. I guess I feel that life is going to throw a lot of stuff at you, and you better be prepared for it. And as again, I say, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've had all of that thrown at me, and because of the morals that my mother and father gave me, and the Lutheran background that was very strong for my sister Patty and me, I think it's helped us get through life, because we don't take any guff. We don't we look at things in reality, and I think that helps a lot.
When you were a little girl, you didn't consider, oh, someday I'm going to be a great actress? That wasn't on your radar at all?
No, I wanted to be in the Ice Follies. I lived in Minnesota, and we had 10,000 lakes for me to practice on. And, of course, it was the height of the Depression. But my daddy found the money to buy me a pair of figure skates. And we had a lot of lakes out there that froze up in the wintertime, and I watched two of my friends taking figure skating lessons. I couldn't join them, but I could watch and I could listen. And then I'd go out to one of the little lakes around my home in Morningside, and I'd practice and practice and practice. And oh, I just knew that was what I was going to, what was going to happen to me. But in my junior and senior year of high school, one year I had to have an operation on my left foot. And back in those days, the doctor said, "Well, you can't skate anymore this year." Mm. And it really affected me terribly. And the following year, I had an acute appendectomy, and the doctors said, "You can't skate anymore this year." And what that did was it killed that possibility of my, you know, becoming an ice skater, which was really sad.
Really sad. The first of many setbacks, I think, in your life.
Yeah, it was. And you deal with it, that's all.
Were you a fan of the movies, or at least Sonya Henie movies?
Oh, yeah, yes. Yes, I wanted to be Sonya Henie. And I was sure I could be her.
Yeah. what about the movies? I mean, was that something that was important to you, or plays, or any of those things?
Not really.
So that
no.
Was,
no. No, I wanted to be an ice skater, and that didn't happen. But becoming a model did.
Uh-huh.
I got off the streetcar in Minneapolis, and this woman came up to me and handed me her card and said, "Would you ask your parents to take you down to Donaldson's department store? I'd like to have you model in our Saturday morning fashion shows." So that started the modeling career, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
And in doing the modeling, of course, then my parents moved to California, where I continued the modeling, and then New York was waving its arm and said, "Come on, this is where you should be."
They let you go, your parents? They didn't say, "You can't go to New York, you're just a little girl"?
No, they didn't. They waited, you know, I waited till I was out of high school, and I was about to be 20 years old. And so I was ready to do that, and with their education and their role models for me, I got on the train, because my boyfriend's father had been killed in an airplane crash, and the thing that he asked was that when I go to New York, I don't fly, but I take the train. So I sat up on the. I saved enough money to buy a ticket for me to sit up on the train.
Oh, gosh.
For 3 days, and keep me in New York at the one of those hotels for women for a week, and enough for me to get back if I didn't make it.
What was New York like in those days? What year was it that you went to New York? 1950?
When was it?
Yeah.
You
were 20, so
1951.
So what was New York like in 1951?
Oh, it was thrilling.
It was all in black and white, right? They didn't have any color. It was all in black and white then.
It was all black and white. Yes, it was. Well, that's funny. But it was exciting, and I stayed at the Barbizon Hotel for Women, and I went to see Eileen Ford. I got there on a Sunday night or something, and I went to meet with Eileen the first thing on Monday morning, and I was so excited, and we had a wonderful meeting, and she right away said yes, and I said, what about my height? I'm not really tall enough, and she said, that's not going to be a problem. And she
you look tall. You look tall on film.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I feel like I am too, so it's a good thing.
I'm going to guess you're about, I don't know, six feet. 6'2".
Thank you. You're off a
when I
bit.
Saw you in Marnie, you were like 100 feet tall. You were huge.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Well, I'm thin.
Yes.
So I think that makes a difference, so that you don't really know how tall I am. But I'm not very tall.
You rode horses also, yeah?
I do. No. Or I did. I haven't recently, but and I love them. I loved Forio, the horse in Marnie.
Oh, it's a beautiful animal.
Oh, I love that horse so much.
Was that really the horse's name?
Yes.
Oh, beautiful animal.
That was his name as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. Did you get to, did you rehearse with him? Did you ride a lot?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. He was my great buddy.
Well-trained horse, you can tell.
Oh, yes. Very beautifully.
Yeah, you're a very good rider.
Oh, thank you.
You can hardly see. You can't see any. You can't see you signaling the horse at all. It's so beautiful.
Great. Thank you. That's wonderful.
I had to watch it. I love the film, and I just had to watch it again after I read your book. And what a fabulous film, and maybe kind of a misunderstood, underappreciated film in the Hitchcock catalog.
Yeah, I think it was, but I think people didn't understand. All those years ago when we made the film, that when something traumatic happens to a child, if it hasn't been dealt with on a psychological or psychiatrical basis, it can have a terrible effect on the person when that person becomes an adult. So people didn't understand that all those years ago. Yeah. But it is true. It is a fact.
When you look back on your experience with the birds and Marnie, which came after your modeling career, do you see, are there positive things that you remember about it?
Or is it all absolutely. And how amazing to have Alfred Hitchcock and his wife Alma as my drama coaches. That was amazing.
A lot of people who've worked with Hitchcock said that, he never gave them any direction. I remember reading about Doris Day feeling unhappy when she was making The Man Who Knew Too Much, that Hitchcock didn't talk to her, didn't say anything to her.
Really?
Yeah. She started crying, and she goes, "If you don't like, my performance, just fire me now." And he goes, "If I didn't like it, I would say something."
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry she had to go through that. That's a shame, because we would talk about the characters and the scene and they were other people, and there wasn't any real strong direction from him.
Did he give you like a line reading or things like that?
Never.
Mm-hmm.
Never. I think that would be very insulting.
He just assumed, you're the actor and you know how to do it.
Well, however we worked it worked.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You would be insulted if a director told you how to read a line.
Oh, I would.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. No, because that's part of your job, is to know how to develop a character.
Did you think of yourself as a method actress, that you developed your whole, that you became that person and you looked into that character and so on, or were you?
Oh, I didn't do method acting. No. I just took on the what I thought the character would say and do, and I suppose that's sort of method acting. I don't know what I would call my acting.
It's good. I call it good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
And Sean Connery, he's so fantastic in that movie also.
Oh, when we were doing the casting of that his role was on, I was wondering, who is Hitch going to choose for this? Marnie is such a cold, frigid woman that what is he going to do? And when he told me he had hired Sean Connery, I picked my jaw off the floor. I said, "Mr. Hitchcock, are you aware of the fact that I am playing this frigid woman who screams every time a man comes near her?" I said, "How am I supposed to handle that? How am I supposed to handle Sean Connery?" And he said, "It's called acting, my dear." And I said, "Oh, fine, okay." So I did my best.
So you found him a charming...
Absolutely fabulous, yes. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen him, but the last time it was just delightful.
I'm Gary Shapiro. You're listening to From the Bookshelf on KSCO. My guest is actress Tippi Hedren. You co-starred with Marlon Brando and Sophia Loren in A Countess from Hong Kong, which was directed by Charlie Chaplin. Tell us a little bit about working with Charlie Chaplin, Tippi Hedren.
The most fun part of Charlie Chaplin was the way he directed. And a lot of the actors were just insulted. Marlon wanted to quit.
Really?
Yeah, because Charlie would get out on the set and he would act out all of our roles, whether it was Sophia or Marlon or me or, it was awesome to watch him. I loved it.
So he could play a woman just as easily as a man when he was.
Oh, he was perfect. He was perfect.
I can see that.
But Marlon really wanted to. I mean, he went to great lengths to quit.
Really?
And Charlie said, "Well, you can't. You have signed a contract, so just bear with us."
Did you find Chaplin a nice person?
Yes, I did.
Was he funny?
I liked him a lot.
Was he a funny guy?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
He was. I liked him a great deal.
So he had a vision of the movie in his head, in a similar way.
I believe
to Hitchcock,
did.
Yeah. I mean, Hitchcock also has like everything all planned out right before.
Well, I think most directors do, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're talking to two very, very brilliant directors here, and I know that they had their plan of how they wanted it to come out.
The film is not very well regarded, The Countess from Hong Kong. Do you think
isn't that too bad?
Do you think it's a good picture?
I do. Yeah. I found it to be delightful watching it, and I liked it a lot.
There was probably some political aspects for people not liking it, I guess, at that time.
Oh, I think you're right there. Yes. And that's too bad.
I once had the opportunity to visit the late Pat Derby at her farm once. She raised animals for television in the movies. You probably knew her.
Not really.
But she had a lion. She said, "Come on over. I'm sitting with a baby lion."
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, oh, a baby lion. It'll be so cute, a little lion. And the lion was
laughing.
Like, yes, yeah. This lion was like the size of a Great Dane.
Yes.
And came running at me and threw me down on the ground. And the force of this baby lion was just incredible.
Well, he was probably about 9 months old.
Yeah, something like that.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, baby lion.
I saw a picture of you, and you're reading a newspaper, and you're leaning with your head against a lion that's like the size of the lion in front of the New York Public Library.
Yeah, his name was Neil. Yes,
so,
I remember that.
How did these animals come into your life?
They came into my life with a lot of love. I was very excited about this whole venture that my then husband had taken on, which was to do a film about the animals in the wild and the problems they have out there. It was called Roar.
It was an easy picture to make. You made it in just a snap. It just took a couple of days to shoot that thing, right?
Yeah, but 5 years. It was a long time. That's why we became so involved with the animals, was because it took so long to make the movie. And that's how we, you know, when the animal trainers, that we were going to use Hollywood acting animals in the movie, and when they read the script, they said, I'm not letting my lion work with another cat. It doesn't know. I don't want my cat hurt. And they said, get your own animals to do the movie. Well, that's a romantic notion. But that's what we did.
How many lions did you eventually have?
Well, at one point we had 100.
100 lions?
Yes.
And they all
tigers.
Lived.
And of course, by the...
They all lived in your house and sat around in the living room.
Oh, no. Well, we did for publicity purposes, but they did not live with us. They're dangerous.
They are. I mean, yes. Did you? I mean, I know you were injured, but did you fear for your life ever, or
no.
Or always, or no?
No, I didn't, because we knew what we were doing with them. We knew what they were capable of doing, and we had the right people around us. And no, this was not a fantasy shoot. This was very, very well planned.
Now there's also a picture of your daughter in bed with Neil.
Yeah, that was stupid.
Now today people would get they'd have you arrested. They'd be very upset with you.
Well, I think people should be arrested if they do those things with lions.
Uh-huh.
But that was then, and he was a trained lion, and we had four trainers there, and they were publicity shots. This wasn't anything that we did. She did not sleep with a lion.
No.
So it was, it was all fantasy, and unfortunately, a lot of people took it seriously. Pictures.
One thing I was thinking about when I was reading about the making of Roar, you have your daughter playing a little girl, or you're playing your daughter anyway in the picture, and you took 5 years to make it. So, didn't the kids grow up while you were making the picture?
It was tough making them look the same way.
Yeah.
It was very difficult.
The continuity.
And Melanie really got tired of having to have her hair the same way all the time.
I bet.
Yeah. It was hard.
That's five difficult years for a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, we just lucked out that it did work. Because 5 years during those years, it can make a big difference in a young person.
Well, so yeah. I want to ask a little bit about animals. So you still have your preserve, Shambhala Preserve, where the animals live?
Yes, we do.
And how do you feel about zoos, circuses, or animals being trained for films, or any of those things?
Well, I feel that that should never take place. I feel that the animals in the zoo are suffering. Many of the zoos are becoming a lot better, though. They're giving they're finding areas where they can have more space, and at least giving the big cats and all the animals more of a space to live in, which is not just a cage. And as far as the circuses, I will not attend a circus if it has live animals in it.
No. The elephants being out of the circus?
Especially.
Yeah.
Elephants especially, because they're so smart. And I've seen a lot of brutality when they're trained, and even when they're in the circuses. And I won't attend. And I tell everybody at the when we have our weekends that we're open on a reservation basis. When I talk about the elephants, and I say if the circus has wild animals in it, don't go. Just don't support that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's brutal to them.
Mm-hmm.
The travel, the confinement, the constant confinement. I mean, it's amazing they don't all go crazy.
So if you had Roar to do over again, you wouldn't do Roar?
Oh, we did it as carefully as we could, and they had enough room.
Yeah.
We didn't have them in little cages.
Right,
they were
right.
In big areas, some of them over an acre.
So you think it's all right if you do it right to have animals in films and so forth?
Well, if you do it right, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's important that people get to know about animals, and but it's difficult. It's difficult and very expensive to do it right.
Roar has some of the most amazing animal footage of any movie ever made.
I'm glad you said that. I agree with you.
But we can't see it. We need to see. You have to make sure they put that movie out in an American Blu-ray copy so we can all enjoy it.
Well, yeah.
I'm just telling you.
Okay.
you had an elephant also. Do you still have elephants at the Shambhala Preserve?
No, they lived out their lives with us. And first we had the bull elephant, Timbo, who came to us from Canada. And when we decided to take the elephant, it was a major choice, because none of us knew really anything about captive elephants. Or wild, how do you work with an elephant? How do you get to know them? And it was really a big choice to make. He came from Canada, and so when we made the choice to have him come down here, they were going to be driving down, and he and his great big truck, and he didn't arrive, and we were thinking, why is it taking so long? And when they finally got here, we asked the driver and the trainer, well, what took so long? And they said, well, every time we came to a forest, we'd stop and let him out. And let him be an elephant. I thought, that is so cool.
Imagine people wandering around their neighborhood and there's a big elephant over there.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. But the other elephant, Coro, was in the circus. And we were really happy to give her a home, that she didn't have to do any of those stupid tricks. And we never, ever asked her to do them. And she never offered. But we never, they were always out wandering around the property. And they had, the last years of their lives were very good.
Can you, do you have a feeling about the intelligence of all the animals you've worked with, from horses to cats to elephants? I mean, do you think elephants are particularly more intelligent than...
Oh, I think they're absolutely brilliant.
Yeah? How many words of English do you feel they can respond to?
You know what? I'm going to find that out. Our elephant trainer, who became the elephant trainer, is now director of the Shambhala Preserve, Chris Gallucci.
Yeah.
And I really knew what I was doing when I hired him all those years ago. He came down on a great big black Harley down the road, and he was all dressed in black, and I thought, whoa, this is going to be interesting. And he turned out to be the best person I ever could have hired. Absolute, without a doubt. And he's been director of the preserve for, so many years, I don't even remember.
And is the preserve set up? Will it continue on forever? I mean, is it are there places we can donate? Should our listeners go?
Oh, absolutely. I founded a 501c3 foundation, calling it the ROAR, R-O-A-R, Foundation. And, we operate totally on donation, including my own.
I'm sure.
So the animals have the best care, and they live in large areas. And the elephants, we were really loved the way they lived, because they had to go in a barn at night so that people, you know, our staff could rest. But in the mornings, they were out, and they were walking up the river, and they had a huge area in which they could live, and they had a great life for being in captivity, and they were not on a chain.
Oh, good. How long do elephants live, and how long do lions live, and how long do tigers
live? The elephants live quite a good lifetime. Ours were in their 50s when they passed away.
What about a lion? What's the life expectancy?
They were living a long time with us here too, in their early 20s.
You know, sometimes I'm petting my cat. I have a little cat.
Yeah.
And I'm petting her, and she's very affectionate. She's happy, and I'm petting
her. And
all of
a sudden, she reaches around and grabs your wrist
and bites me.
But you know what she's telling you? She said, "Thank you very much, but I'm done now."
I'm done now. But she's a little cat. Well,
yeah.
You know, did Neil ever reach around and?
I know we had to be very careful of those, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, do lions do that?
Oh, yes, they could.
Yeah.
Yes.
That would be scary.
Fortunately, we had very few accidents.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. We're talking this week with actress Tippi Hedren. You know, one of the things that's exciting for me to talk to you is because you're a movie star, and I'm stage struck. I get excited. About movie stars. And you know all kinds of other movie stars. I want to ask you about one that I really love. I fell in love with her when she was in this movie directed by Michael Ritchie, is a classic called Smile. And her name's Melanie Griffith. And then I saw her in Working Girl. Oh, what a classic.
Wasn't that awesome?
She's one of the best actresses around. You know her personally.
I do. I do know her personally. In fact, I gave birth to her.
Well, she's a terrific actress.
Yes, she is. And her daughter is very good.
Her daughter's great. Yeah. So it's in your
genes. Dakota Johnson.
Dakota Johnson, right.
She's famous.
Do you know her? You talked to her?
I do.
So tell me a little about Melanie Griffith. You guys are very close.
Yes, we are. Yeah, she and Dakota, I think, are in Spain right now together. Dakota's doing a film over there, and Melanie was she was traveling, so she called me and she said, "Mom, I'm going to go over and see Dakota." And I thought, "Oh, I wish I could go too." Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we all have great fun when we're together.
I bet.
Yes, we do.
Are you? Were you pleased that Melanie became an actress, or concerned?
Well, I was surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, I always said that I would never try to have my children do what I want them to do, because I don't know whether they would like to do what I wanted them to do. So I never even thought about what I would want them to do. That was their choice, and they all chose very well.
She's a good actress, Melanie Griffith. Were you?
Melanie's a wonderful actress.
She really is.
Is Dakota.
Yeah, so is Dakota. Did that surprise you that she was so good at it?
I was pleased.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thrilled. And I was mostly thrilled because I didn't say, "This is how you should do it."
No.
I never, ever said that to them.
Well,
this is how I would suggest you read that line, or I never, ever did that.
Well, what about this? I don't know how to ask this exactly, but when you were working with Alfred Hitchcock, and people who have read your book and seen the movie know that you were a victim of the classic sexual harassment.
I wasn't. I stopped it before it started.
But
I was not a victim.
Not okay, but the pressure was definitely there, right?
I stopped that pressure and paid a
price.
Well, I don't know. I didn't pay the price at all.
No, you don't feel that.
I don't feel that way at all.
He stifled your career, and at least for a couple
of
years.
Yeah, it did. But you know what? What is is.
Yeah. So
it was my choice, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So,
yeah.
But so when Melanie was going into show business, did you say, "Listen, you have to know this. This is what directors..."
I think, you know what I did? I let my Melanie and my three sons that I helped raise, who weren't my sons, but they were my sons.
Your stepsons.
I feel that it's more important for them to see life observed in an observing way. And so I tried to be a role model for them. And I, of course, would reprimand if there was something that needed to be reprimanded. But I feel that what you display in your life and your relationships and how you handle situations is more important than a lot of verbal lessons.
So you didn't feel, because she was a young woman going into this profession that you've had this experience in, you didn't think I should warn her or...
Well, I think she saw all the warnings.
Yeah.
I think she saw it. I didn't have to do any lecturing, and I certainly wouldn't say, "Oh, don't go into this business because I'm in it and I know what it's like."
Right, right.
No, I am not pompous enough to think that I could... You know, should tell anybody what they should do, but by observing is more important than any lecture you could ever give.
I guess by the same token, you were married. In your book, you talk about your first marriage and feel like you were married too young.
Yes, I do.
And then you also feel that Melanie fell into some of the same traps. There was nothing you could do to prevent that from happening.
Well, you can try.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. It all worked out okay.
Yes, I think so.
Well, this book, it's such a marvelous book, and I want everybody to read it. I think everyone's reading it already, but now let's tell them again.
Well, I believe it is. I think it's the top seller this week.
I love the bird motif that you have in your signature, and then on the
yeah, that okay. I did that once, and when I was signing an autograph, I put a bird on it. And the next time, the next event where the fans were out there, I signed my name, and he said, "Where's the bird?" I mean, it had traveled that fast with, the different fans. And so then I started putting three birds on it, and now it's just legion.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
This picture, I'm going to ask you about this picture on the cover of the book. It's an absolutely stunning, beautiful portrait of you. When was this picture taken?
You know something? I don't know. I don't know. They had to get credit from Universal.
Uh-huh. They so had sometime to around get, the birds or more.
Yeah, get permission to use it.
Yeah, you don't recall taking this picture?
No, I don't. But, you're photographed so much that it's difficult to isolate the photograph sometimes. But I really like that picture. I wish I still looked like that.
Well, does that make it, for me, I was not a beautiful woman, so.
And you never will be.
I never will be. So I look in the mirror and I go, oh, and this is what I look like.
Oh, get over it.
But for you, because you're such a gorgeous woman, did that make it a little bit more difficult for you as you grew older and you looked in the mirror and you, I don't know.
Well, I think I look pretty good.
Oh, I think you look fantastic.
Yeah.
Monica, are you kidding? You look great. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all.
Yeah. I didn't have anything to lose, but,
No. I've paid attention to my weight and I clean my face really well every night and I have my favorite lotions and that sort of thing that I'm absolutely dedicated to. So, they're all...
I read once where Joan Crawford would put her all of her makeup on, even if she was just going to get the mail, in case she, in case she ran into a fan. She didn't want them to think, "Oh, that's not Joan Crawford."
Oh, that's funny. Well, I'll tell you something. Yeah. I have been blessed with very long eyelashes, and I will not leave my house without have the huge amount of mascara on my lashes.
Yeah.
I will not leave the house.
I'm the same way.
Then you understand my position.
Well, what an honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you so much. This was fun.
The book is Tippi, a memoir, and my guest, Tippi.
Where are you located?
We're in Santa Cruz, California.
Well, that's not too far. If you ever come down to L.A., please come to Shambhala.
Can I?
Look us up on Shambhala.org.
Shambhala.org.
Shambhala.org. O-R-G.
I can come and tour the facility?
Yes, you can, but you have to pay $1 million and have a reservation.
I haven't got $1 million.
Oh, well, then we'll accept what you can. Yeah.
All right. Oh, wait, before you go, let me one more little question.
Okay.
I noticed that in your acknowledgments in your book that you named Donald Trump as a friend. Were you aware that he was recently elected president of the United States? Were you aware?
Really? Something, I remember that.
Is he a friend of yours?
I met him in Florida.
Yeah.
I met him in Florida, and it was brief, but, I remembered him, and maybe he remembers me. I don't know.
Did you date him?
No, I did not. No, I did not. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
And I'm not a good liar.
No, neither is he. Well, Tippi Hedren, again, thank you. It was just so much thrill for me to talk to you, and I loved your book, and thanks so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling.
That's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, you can check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. You can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Tippi Hedren. Her new book is called Tippi, a Memoir. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back here to see you again next week.